back to Big Nerdy Questions B&Q. It's episode 14, and we're going back to Alderaan places because Star Wars is the theme again tonight, because we know how much you loved all of us taking you on the dates, the Star Wars character. Tonight isn't quite so romantic. No, tonight we're going to do what historians love to do and do counterfactuals up in this place. What would have happened if Anakin didn't turn dark? And what would have happened if Obi-Wan did instead? On tonight's panel, we have Colleen.
Hello, Internet.
And joining us for the first time, welcome, Ed.
Hello, everyone.
And Matt, our loyal friend and true, is not here tonight. He is off moisture farming, so we don't have any sponsorships tonight. So if you want to sponsor us from afar, please feel free to do so. But we do have a big nerdy recommendation. Colleen, what's our recommendation tonight?
It's a YouTube channel that I recently stumbled across, but it's been there for a while. It's got really, really funny and entertaining videos. The channel, it's called Nigahiga, N-I-G-A-H-I-G-A. And oh my lord, it is hilarious. He recently posted one about the Pokemon Go, like a more truthful version of the, or honest version of the Pokemon Go, and it is hilarious. You guys need to check that out.
If it's anything like some of the videos you sent me in the past, I am very excited to watch some of this. After all, you're the one who first showed me Japanese pranks, so you can't go wrong.
Endlessly entertaining, as well as the Russian dash cam videos. Watch it forever.
I just think Russia is the Florida of the world with the strange things that go on there.
Russia is the Russia of the world.
But thank you very much for that recommendation, and we will have it in the show notes, so loyal fans, you do not have to worry about spelling it. We'll spell it for you, because we know that you'll Google it. So, it is now time to get into the question, and before we start, I do want to put caveats here. Number one, obviously, like with all shows, there are going to be spoilers here, and Colleen and Ed are both two of the biggest Star Wars experts I have ever met. So they're going to be bringing in things from the extended universe, from fan fiction, from the television series, including Star Wars Rebels. So if you want to make sure you avoid spoilers for anything ever produced under the Star Wars banner, leave now or forever hold your peace. But there's probably a more important caveat to make here. This episode is basically looking at in a two-pronged approach. We are trying to understand characters, obviously, in a fictional universe to the best of our understanding. More so than that, though, we're trying to understand their psychology. Why they did things and what would have happened if they wouldn't have done things. So we recognize that a lot of tonight's episode is going to be speculation, but we'd like to think that the three of us, particularly Colleen and Ed, are very qualified to make good recommendations or good speculations as to what would have happened in this universe. We know that you may have some different interpretations. You may have seen some different works that take things in drastically different paths. But that's the fun of this kind of a discussion. And I think one of the quintessential things of nerddom is questioning what would have happened if something different happens in our favorite universe. You know, the one I hear all the time for Lord of the Rings is what would have happened if they would have used the eagles to get to Mordor quicker.
Uber!
exactly, the Uber Eagle. This is one of the fun things about nerddom, so it's about time we tackled one like this. So that being said, for the first part of our discussion, we're going to talk about why Anakin may have made a different decision. And Colleen, I'll go to you first. Under what circumstances do you think that Anakin Skywalker doesn't go dark? What makes this a plausible discussion?
There's a lot of, I guess you could call them, like, those little, like, you know, key points, I can't even think. My brain is like dead. It's a long day for me. I apologize, Internet. But anyway, I think it just depends on where you're going to start your focus. Like, if you think about, like, when Anakin was first discovered when he was 9, okay? And, you know, you can... focal point. That's what I was thinking of, focal points. Anyway, if you think about it, it's when he's as early as 9 years old, and you kind of question why Palpatine was so interested in at him time. Creepy! So it just depends on where you start. I think a lot of things I've seen online start when, in episode 3, when, you know, the Jedi Council go to confront Palpatine and Anakin. doesn't go with them. And then there's the question of what if he, you know, didn't, you know, follow the council, you know, to their confrontation, stayed, you know, like Windu told him to, or what if when he showed up, he decided to, you know, side with Mace and like, you know, confront the Emperor. I don't know. So for me, I think the discussion can take off. It can go off in many different directions, just depending on where you start. Like, for example, what if Obi-Wan wasn't, you know, so overcome with the grief of loss of Qui-Gon? And because a lot of people online point out that when Obi-Wan initially started treating Anakin, there was this huge like distance between the two, just because Anakin was very, I wouldn't necessarily call him needy, but he was used to having, you know, his mother. So you have the comfort, love, and affection that Obi-Wan, raised with a Jedi, wasn't used to giving, first of all, but then also he was dealing with the death of his, you know, master. So he was dealing with his own grief as well as his own brush with the dark side. And so people pointed out that that created like a breach, you know, in their bond and their trust that you continued to grow to a certain extent by the time Anakin was older when he was a teenager. So you could argue, you know, well, what if that didn't happen? You know, and that, so that Obi-Wan was more focused on Anakin when he was younger, so that their bond, you know, became, they had a solid foundation from the start and grew. So it was very strong by the time Anakin was a teenager. So you didn't have all that, you know, super over the top angsty, you know, stuff. So that at that point, it creates this catalyst so that when Anakin's older, he doesn't have all his like dark and moody emotions or whatever. So he trusts Obi-Wan. And that is, I think, a key change, being able to trust Obi-Wan with things going on. So that would, to a certain extent, you could argue that perhaps that would all prevent Fallen's older, but, you know, he's able to talk to Obi-Wan about things, the conflict. Perhaps he would talk to Obi-Wan about the dreams involving his mother, and to the point where maybe they did something about it, or, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying, that's something.
So, Ed, do you think the Obi-Wan relationship is one of the most crucial focal points of Anakin's fall?
I'm going to say this. Anakin through the prequels is not a likable character. He is not. Hayden Christensen and just the way he was written, it was just terrible. I think that the Clone Wars, the show, went a long way in fixing his character because I genuinely did not like him in the films, but I actually grew to like him in the show. And in defense of Obi-Wan, who is one of my favorite characters, he was thrust into having just been apprentice into having an apprentice of his own. And then we know what happens shortly thereafter in the next couple of years. The Clone Wars come about, all that stuff. And then, yes, I think if he had a stronger relationship with Obi-Wan, it might have been slightly different. But Anakin was such a hothead, and it was always him, I don't know, trying to buck the system. Why are they not promoting me to master? Why are they always doubting my abilities? So on and so on. It's hard to like him. It really is.
Yeah, it's hard to, Anakin didn't understand the traditional approach to train Jedi, because his big key part of his personality is emotion. He's so tuned into his emotion, and the Jedi tend to be the opposite, you know, where they say, you know, they want to use logic and reason and not focus so much on their own emotions, and Anakin struggles with that constantly.
Vulcan.
Another argument can be made that perhaps their Jedi approach to training Anakin should, because Anakin in his own situation was unique, should have also been different. And that was perhaps a fault of the Jedi. I mean, you know, and of course, there's also a fault at Anakin, too, for being unable to or unwilling to try to control his emotions and his responses that way. But I think also people have argued that part of that reason is not simply just him having deep connections to his emotions, but because it was of his connection to the Force, that it made it very difficult for him to control his emotions because he was so in tune with everything else that was going on around him and just manifested in that way.
And you know, you're talking about the state of the Jedi. Within the history, at that point, right before their fall, they were so blind and arrogant and just oblivious to everything that was going on. I mean, they make comments such as, you know, should we tell the Chancellor that we are starting to lose our connection to feeling these things in the Force to a degree? And, Windu said, or somebody said, if, you know, there were Sith, we would know it, just because we would know it. I mean, they were blind and they were stupid, and that's why they fell.
Like, yeah, I mean, Yoda keeps going, the dark side clouds everything. And then it's like, so then how would you know if it was Sith that they cloud everything? Yeah, I agree. Like, what is in episode 2, you know, when Obi-Wan goes to the Jedi archives or the library, whatever. And what is it? There's like that black hole where the planet should be, even it's really obvious. Somebody did a very poor Photoshop delete kind of version, you know, of just removing the planet there. And Obi-Wan's like, hey, this planet should be here. Something should be here. What's up? And then the librarian, you know, Jocasta, who was like, oh, well, if it's not in the archives, it doesn't exist.
That's
just like narrow-mindedness, like, oh, we know all. And
to be fair, I've used that line at work.
Yes.
Different context, though.
He responds, but since when did the Jedi ever just take the easy way out? I have the quick and easy path. Isn't that the path to the dark side?
Maybe she was part of the dark side. Plot twist.
Oh, wait, does that mean that Google is, like, of the dark side, quick, easy search? Anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
But we just lose our sponsorship, so please listen to us on Google Play.
Yeah, and the Jedi themselves hadn't dealt with the Sith in, like, 1,000 years, so what would they know about what the Sith were like unless they, you know, sat there and listened to the holocrons, which they wouldn't do because the Sith are evil and the Jedi don't do anything that has to do with anything that's evil, so it's like they were willfully ignorant.
So can I ask this question, with the willfully ignorant, the Jedi Council, was the Jedi negligent, or were all the Jedi negligent in even pursuing this prophecy and then taking in a 9-year-old boy that, by all accounts, was, because of his emotional status, not right for the practices of the Jedi?
Well, I mean, what is it? Obi-Wan said he was going to train him anyway. I do like the idea that maybe if, like, the council said, no, we're not going to train him, and Obi-Wan said, screw you, and he left the Jedi Order to train Anakin anyway. I also have to wonder that, we know that there were other Jedi temples throughout the galaxy. I mean, there's the thing on, Yavin 4. And,
yes,
and other locations. So I kind of wonder, like, if you think about the Jedi on Coruscant, I think of them as kind of like being the headquarters, Jedi headquarters. They have to be Jedi enclaves throughout the galaxy.
So they're the Jedi Vatican kind.
They have different, because it is a, you know, quasi-religion, but they have different interpretations. Like, for example, the Jedi say that about peace, you know, there should only be peace. We're peacekeepers. Well, perhaps there's a part of the order that takes that literally and says, okay, we're all 100% pacifist. So I kind of wonder if maybe the approach they took at Coruscant, you know, to training Jedi however they interpreted the code, maybe they could have sent Obi-Wan and Anakin somewhere else where they had a better, you know, where their viewpoints, you know, better aligned. I don't know.
Maybe they should have gone to the planet where Luke is in episode 7.
Yes. Very scenic.
Yeah, we don't know what that is yet, but I'm guessing it's some sort of Jedi temple based on the clues.
Well, I think the issue with the Jedi Order at the time is that, it's like you were saying, is that they're very narrow-minded. They're thinking, this, we've been doing this things one way for 1,000-plus generations or whatever, so this is the way that it works, and we're not going to deviate from that. Even though Count Dooku himself, you know, because he used to be a Jedi before he left the Order, I mean, one of his main problems was what he saw as stagnation of the Order, and that's what disgusted him and was part of the reason why he left to begin with. And everybody knows that if you don't innovate, if you stagnate, you're going to fail. You know, and Dooku wanted nothing to do with a failing Order. He wanted to change the Order, and they were against it, so he left.
Sounds like the Ottoman Empire, and that's been your historical lesson of the day. So, Ed, what do you think about this?
Okay, about the stagnation, or just about how Anakin would have stayed on the light side?
Either one.
About the reasons that I think that Anakin could have stayed on the light side, and I'm going to go into the spoiler territory now, and I'm only going to count what Disney considers canon, which is their expanded universe novels and the Clone Wars show and Rebels. That's what they consider canon now. The biggest thing is, I think that if Ahsoka had stayed with the Jedi, that would have had the biggest impact on keeping Anakin on the light side. In season 2 of Rebels, there was a scene, they were at a Jedi temple, there you go, on Lothal, and she was having a Force vision, and she did not know that Anakin had become Vader, and she had a vision of Anakin. In the vision, Anakin said, "Why did you leave me? You weren't there when I needed you the most. You don't know what I've become." And then you see Vader, and it cuts to black. So that's one of the biggest indications that she was the driving force that would have kept him, to me, on the light side.
Hmm. Now, for those of us who haven't watched Rebels, can you just clue us in briefly on the kind of relationship that Ahsoka and Anakin have shown in that series?
Well, their relationship was in Clone Wars, because
if you
haven't watched it, and this is a follow-up series, when in the events of the show, Anakin is given a Padawan himself, kind of like Obi-Wan was. It's this young girl, and then they go on, they're going through the entire war, and through some events that happen, and some Jedi turning bad, she ends up leaving the Order because she's accused of a crime she didn't commit. So she had a real close relationship with him, and then she drops out of the picture until Star Wars Rebels comes back up. She doesn't know that Anakin's alive or dead, and then she's having this Force vision in regards to Vader. And so they had a really, really close relationship throughout the series.
Yeah, and I think part of that with Anakin slash Vader, Vaderkin. Vaderkin, you know, telling his former apprentice that, you know, "Where were you? You abandoned me. You weren't there when I needed you," is part of Anakin's attachment, you know, his issues with attachment. People that he truly loved, like Obi-Wan, like Padme, like, I guess, Palpatine, and like, I can't pronounce the name to save my life. The apprentice. So those people he really cared about, and then and his mother, you know, he's always afraid of loss, and he ended up in the end, because he was so afraid of losing everybody. So, but I think, yeah, his emotions, his emotional attachments, people, I think had a big play in his turning dark. So maybe I guess something that could have changed that for him to stay light, his ability to, if he ever had the ability to accept things, that, you know, accept the things you can't change, and just, as Yoda kept saying, you have to let people go.
So what we're saying is all he needed was love. I mean, he's over-attached. Like, it seems like the common denominator in every important moment we're talking about so far is a relationship with somebody else that he cares about. You know, it's not external big things, it's interpersonal things.
Well, I mean, it is a big thing. It's a key part of who he is, part of his core personality, and that's because of his very deep attachment and attunement to Force. I mean, he was very much attached to the, and actually in tune with the living Force, just like, you know, Qui-Gon was. That's just who he is as a person. You can't just be like, oh, one day Anakin woke up and decided, okay, I'm going to be more like Obi-Wan and just be like, no emotions, release my emotions into the Force or whatever. He hates meditation, he hates all that kind of stuff, but there's gotta be. So Annie, I just, if you look at it and look at it that way, you just can't change Anakin, and he is, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of us find him really annoying because of those things, but at the same time, I mean, it makes him, I guess you could say, he's like one of those tragic heroes, you know? He has all these really great, good qualities, but unfortunately, it's like, he just everything just kind of blows up in his face, because he just can't let go. His attachments, I think, in the end, are what, you know, really can.
Of course,
because attachment to Palpatine is a big reason why he turned dark.
Of course, we could go the route of our modern philosopher Alfred Hitchcock and say a boy's best friend is his mother, and we see, you know, the relationship. He was pulled from his mom, and then his mom gets killed, and that's going to screw up anybody, especially someone who is so based on these emotional attachments, and living in a society where he's told these emotional attachments are wrong. And if maybe somebody in the Jedi Order decides to let him be emotional, you know, allow for a different Myers-Briggs personality type, then maybe we won't have these problems.
Yeah, I think you could say that maybe the Order made a mistake in accepting Anakin, or trying to train him, or trying to mold him. I think that's a big problem, is that they were trying to mold him to what they considered to be, you know, a Jedi, or how you should be a Jedi. And they didn't seem to really give him a lot of consideration or leeway. And Anakin, big on what's really important to him is trust. And the Council, Mace Windu, note, never trusted him, and he was always very open about that. So, I mean, again, how are you going to expect Anakin to be loyal to an Order, or to the people belong to that Order, when they don't even trust him in retail?
And much like a much maligned droid of the prequels, the Council made a grievous error.
Oh.
Oh.
Ouch. out.
Ed, do you have any other thoughts on Anakin not turning before we get into the ideas of what may have happened?
Well, we've covered it pretty well.
Okay.
It's all about his personality and his attachment. Had his mother not died, has Padme not died, had Obi-Wan paid more attention to him, or had the council accepted him, and all that. I mean, those are the only ways that he would have been redeemed to the light, is if he had a different personality, or people treated him differently, or didn't die.
And I don't think it's an accident that the reason he gets back to the light is because of an interpersonal relationship with his son.
Because that attachment, he turned good because of his love for his son. It's the same thing. It's, you know, it's just the opposite part of the same coin.
Yeah, it's a Two-Face showing up in Star Wars. But, so, Ed, I'll let you start off with this one then. What happens in a Star Wars universe where in Episode 3, Anakin rejects Palpatine and stays on the light side? How do you think it goes down?
I've got a couple of different theories on this. We kind of touched on it a little bit to begin with, how blind the Jedi were. Let's suppose for a minute that they took out the Emperor, took out, you know, Dooku, all that stuff. They won the Clone War. How confident they are then, how arrogant they are then, now multiply it because they've taken out the threat that was there. Say generations passed and Snoke comes in, if he's still around or whoever, and they're so overly confident and just the Jedi way degrades so much further. Because one of my issues, and what I'll get to when we get to the Obi-Wan thing, why I could see him turning dark, is the Jedi did a lot of, you know, not good things during the Clone Wars to fight that war. And things that the Jedi would not normally do or agree with, it was subverted, and they did this to try to win the war, and I'll cite this when we get to Obi-Wan, but I think that they could have set themselves up for further failure. You know, the Republic was on its last knees anyway. I mean, would that broken system have endured? I don't know. Hold on a second, I've got some notes here I'd put down, but... If he had killed Palpatine, that would have ended the Empire there. But like I said, it could have gone on to something worse. On the opposite spectrum, he brought balance to the Force much earlier. Maybe the Jedi Council is at peace then. I don't know.
Yeah, only after he, like, saves the entire galaxy do they finally trust him. Great, that's all I had to do. Oh, I didn't know that. I probably should have let the galaxy almost come to the verge of, you know, complete implosion maybe, you know, 10 years earlier. Save myself the headache. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for your vote of confidence.
Vote of no confidence.
Do you think Anakin feels, stays on the light side, but becomes some sort of his lone wolf? He says, screw you guys, the war's over. I'm going to go off and mope on my own island like his son, if it does eventually. And, you know, I'm just going to go over here and be myself because you guys don't like me anymore. So screw you guys, I'm going home. I don't know, maybe.
You know, I would love for a script to be written by the South Park guys for Star Wars, because that would be fantastic.
Respect my Jedi authority!
No, Jabba, these are my cheesy poofs.
Of course Jabba's eating the cheesy.
Yes.
Maybe he goes back to Tatooine. I mean...
Oh, hell no. He hates that planet.
That's true. And he's got no one left there except Sabuba, the pod racer.
Hey, Watto was still alive. Come on.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Watto.
His former slave owner, you know.
Well, if 1865 taught us anything, it's that they generally don't do well in situations like this. But, you know, you could.
I think, you know, in the scenario where, you know, Anakin, either Anakin personally does it or Anakin with whoever the hell's left of the council, you know, that happens to remove Palpatine in whatever way, he's gone. We're going to assume that means he's dead. They still have to deal with the Republic. They still have to deal with the Separatists. Just because we know that Palpatine was manipulating both sides doesn't mean that in that reality that everybody else is going to be suddenly aware of it too. Because things at that point were so bad that the Republic didn't trust the Jedi. And of course the Separatists don't trust them either. So I could see a scenario where, okay, yay, Palpatine's removed, and so we're assuming that he didn't have any other Sith apprentice, like, you know, tucked into a quarter somewhere for them to have to deal with. Because if there's one thing that guy is really good about, it's intentions. But anyway, assuming all of that, then now you've got the Jedi versus pretty much it's still the same thing, the Jedi versus the galaxy. And the big question is, after they basically kill the Chancellor, what, you know, is the Republic going to even trust them? Or are they going to, or is this now going to turn into another type of a civil war where instead of the Republic versus the Separatists, it's the Jedi versus the Republic? So it could still be that it's very similar scenario, but it's except where you have the Jedi trying to fight the clone, you know, the troopers, except without Order 66, except now it's the clone troopers who are trying to defend whatever's, you know, defend the Republic against what they view as a very aggressive, you know, Jedi order, because they just killed their chance.
Would Padme potentially still be alive and be able to take the reins of the Republic?
Okay, well, let's say that Padme doesn't die because she doesn't have that stupid broken heart crap. But stupidest, they could have been like, oh, hey, you know, broken trachea, internal bleeding, totes suck, you know, but no.
She could have fallen into the fire pit, you know.
I mean, anything would have been better, quite frankly. But no, she wouldn't have been in any condition because, hello, she just had babies.
That's true. So you're left with President Jar Jar.
No. Quickest assassination in galactic history.
Yeah, no kidding. That would have been like they decapitate Palpatine. Oops, I accidentally killed Jar Jar. Sorry.
So who's the Speaker of the Republic?
Isn't it that blue guy? There's that blue guy who's always hanging around Palpatine and like weirdly calls him Master for some reason in Episode 3, which doesn't make any sense. That's just weird. Anyway,
well, he might be the next one in line. Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe
he's
not.
Wasn't he a Twi'lek, or was he not? I don't remember.
No, he's not a Twi'lek, because he has, like,
the horns.
Yeah, the blue guy.
I mean, eventually the Jedi Council may just say, screw it, and to impose martial law. I mean, they're already, in the Clone Wars, doing things, like you said, Ed, that are contrary to what you would expect the Jedi to do. So they may just say, okay, the Republic's broken, we're taking over because we know best, and then you have a rebellion against the Jedi.
Everything descends into chaos.
Yeah.
I think in the scenario where the Jedi aggressively kill Palpatine, or, you know, is not good. You know, especially before Palpatine reveals himself. If it's a different scenario where Palpatine reveals himself publicly, and then the Jedi kill him. But even in a scenario where the Jedi are even perceived slightly as the aggressors, regardless of how evil, you know, Palpatine might be, he could dance naked on top of, like, Coruscant and be like, I'm a Sith Lord, and people are still going to be like, but he's our Chancellor, you know? I think it's that any scenario where the Jedi are perceived as aggressive, and it's not like a scenario where they didn't really have any other choice because Palpatine went, like, batshit crazy and was going to try to destroy everything, I think the Jedi are going to be viewed as a threat, and everything's just going to go downhill. Now, if they were somehow able to disarm him, you know, hey, look what happened to Dooku. and then, you know, subdue him so that then his crimes are brought before the galaxy and he goes to trial, as Anakin suggested, would be better for the Jedi anyway.
Is it even plausible that Palpatine could have been disarmed and imprisoned without neutralizing his threat level?
It's totally easy. Like, in the books, in the extended universe, remember, they have the little, what are those, the little chameleon things, Yislami things, you know? Anyway, they create force bubbles so that force users, if they're nearby, they can't use the force. So it takes the force away from them. So then, basically, it's just a really pissed off old man.
Well, I kind of...
Clint Eastwood, essentially.
I'm not saying it was the right choice, but when Windu said he was too dangerous to be kept alive, and Colleen, you said, or Josh, you did, about how many contingency plans Palpatine had, I think that, you know, had he been captured, regardless of whether he had access to the Force, I think he would have turned this around on the Jedi, because that's just how he was.
Maybe Blue Dude is got the key and is waiting to unlock him or something. Who knows?
Maybe it's like, what is the movie? He has his own doomsday device hidden away somewhere.
Yes, and it's also possible that he's already cloned himself, and there's just waiting in the wings.
I think there was a clone of him in the old expanded universe. I don't remember.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, the EU tended to use that plot device a lot.
the prequels used the clones quite a bit, so it's okay. Yeah.
Does the original trilogy in any way, shape, or form happen with Anakin staying on the light side?
Well, go right ahead, Ed.
I don't think it happens. I don't think that that trilogy happens. I think that the Jedi Council would have endured, but I don't think it would have been stronger for it, and I think it would have eventually collapsed when a bigger threat came up. That's just the way I see it happening.
Perhaps like that species in the extended universe that comes in that's can avoid the Force entirely. I'm blanking on their name.
Yuuzhan Vong?
Yes.
Yes, nerd points. I love it.
yeah, so if the new Shang Vong show up, Maybe that's where you get your Han Solo nerf herding. I don't know.
Well, they would at this point in time, if they showed up with the galaxy such chaos that it was, two things would happen. Either they would just shred and destroy everybody, and everybody would hail their new overlords, or it means that the Republic, the Jedi, and the Separatists would get their shit together, and they would band together against common enemy. But, I mean, I think that a scenario would be that, you know, I still firmly believe that if they killed Palpatine, the Jedi killed Palpatine, then they would just, the galaxy would just descend into absolute chaos. I mean, because even if the Jedi tried to instill martial law, it's not going to go well for them because, again, then they're just confirming to everybody that they really are the aggressors, like Palpatine was, you know, not even subtly hinting the Republic. They have a very good reason to fear them, and now they're trying to take over. So as far as the impact on the original trilogy, don't forget that Death Star is still out there somewhere, right? And Palpatine, again, with his tendencies, I mean, he had the Empire in place. I mean, do you really think that Tarkin's just going to sit by, you know, and do nothing, even if Palpatine is removed? Oh, hell no. So whatever, you know, of the Empire exists within whatever's left of the Republic, they'll probably stage a coup because they have the power to do it. And then they can just, and they'll just basically destroy everything else in their path. It's basically going to be just who the strongest person is going to survive that.
Now, Colleen, to be fair, we know that Tarkin knows how to stay still while something blows up around him.
This is true. Grand Moff Tarkin, as a slight tangent, I'm hoping that in Rogue One he has the same sort of gravitas with his villainy, because when the first time I watched Episode 4, A New Hope, as a kid, Vader scared me a little bit, but I was more scared of Tarkin.
Can I suggest something to you, Josh? Within the new expanded universe, they did a book solely about Tarkin throughout the Clone Wars up until, I think, the Galactic Empire. It was a pretty interesting read, and it's considered canon now.
Nice.
It's just called Tarkin. I can't remember the name of the author, but
I will look for that.
It was good.
You know, I would actually be kind of happy if it turns out that Snoke is related to Tarkin somehow. That'd be kind of a nice twist. An unexpected one, I think, compared to what people have been guessing.
No, Snoke is just looking for the One Ring.
That would be fantastic if he was.
So Snoke is really Sauron? Yeah. What?
The Force is a precious thing.
So, but I really think that in that scenario, either the Jedi are going to, if Jedi would either come out on top, they would be completely, you know, they might end up, the Order would probably fall, you know, through their own, in the attempt to save their own selves and save the Republic and to save what was left of the Order in the chaos after, you know, Palpatine's murder, for lack of better, you know, term, then I think that they would become the very thing they're seeking to destroy, and they would probably collapse from within, you know? I mean, hello, surprise. On the other hand, you know, then I think people like Tarkin would probably, you know, they would win. They would take over. And then you have the Empire, except instead of Palpatine as Emperor, you have maybe somebody like Tarkin.
Makes sense.
But, you know, but Anakin, and we all know Anakin, I mean, there's no way in hell he would sit on the sideline while all this going on. Whatever Padme is doing with the twins on Naboo, she'd probably go to Naboo and do, you know, stuff over there. Anakin would not sit and watch everything burn. He would have to be involved somehow. Now, whether or not he'd survive that chaos, I don't know.
Well, you have to imagine that Tarkin or whoever is the Emperor would go after the Skywalker family because they know they're a threat in some way, shape, or form. Who knows if the twins even make it to adulthood? I mean, I don't know. Because it was already really hard for them to conceal Luke and Leia separately for all those years. If they're living together with their mother on Naboo, not even a Gungan army could stop them, you know? So it's I don't think it spells good things for Luke and Leia. Although, to be fair, if they're raised together, they don't have that awkward kissy-kissy moment. So, I mean, that's a plus. You know, that's a plus.
Well, see, I'm not quite sure if whoever became Emperor that wasn't Palpatine, you know, would even really consider the Skywalkers to be a threat beyond Anakin. Because unless Palpatine left detailed notes, you know, had a diary, you know, my evil Sith diary, you know.
Hashtag my evil Sith diary.
You know, explaining all of his, like, master plans to whoever his successor was going to be, I don't really see it being obvious at first, you know, that, you know, Skywalkers were a threat. Anakin would be a threat because he would come, you know, he would burst down the door with his lightsaber and try to, like, kill, you know, or destroy whoever was in charge.
And Padme's a threat politically.
Right. I mean, and if word got out, you know, that they were married and that those, you know, the twins were his children, then I can see them, you know, using the twins and Padme as, like, leverage against Anakin.
I could see that, too. Yeah.
That's... Hostage. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be more a political thing, not like, I'm going to turn these children to the dark side, because, you know, assuming that Palpatine was the only dark side user here.
Because there's no evidence that Tarkin or anybody else was a Force user.
No, Tarkin definitely wasn't at all, but...
Evil, yes. Force user, no.
Now, if you think about the Jedi, I mean, then they might, however, try to lay claim to the twins, despite what, you know, Anakin may want. So that would create an interesting dynamic there.
So I think we've kind of gone to where Anakin, there's so much more we can explore with this, but I do want to go on to Obi-Wan. And Ed, since Obi-Wan is your favorite character, why don't you start us off here as to the focal points where you think Obi-Wan might have decided to screw the good side and I'm going evil. What could have made Obi-Wan jump ship?
Okay, I'm still wrapping my head around Emperor Tarkin. That's pretty awesome to me. Tarkin's going to make the Empire great again. I can't wait.
Well done, sir.
All right. I'm going to say a joking way that I could see Obi-Wan going down the dark side, and then I'll be serious. There was this scene you'll all remember. Him and Qui-Gon, they crash land on Naboo, and he comes across this Gungan. Now, I think that's enough to turn anybody evil, but that's probably the joke.
It's true.
I think that's enough to say anybody say, screw this, I'm gone.
And if you recall from episode 3, Matt explained in good detail why Jar Jar is in fact the most evil character in the entire Star Wars canon. So please go back, listen to episode 3 if you haven't listened to it, dear listeners, and you'll see that Ed is not just joking, he is speaking the gospel truth here. But Ed, please continue.
Okay, on a more serious note, Obi-Wan, I could see turning dark just through the events of the prequels, just through the movies and the Clone Wars show and the novels. Easily enough, I mean, okay, he's an apprentice at the start of this, albeit he's been doing it for a while and he's almost to the point where they're going to make him a knight, but he gets into this confrontation with a full-fledged Sith, and like we said earlier, they thought they'd been gone for thousands of years. He watches his master get killed right in front of him, and then if you watch the scene when he takes out Darth Maul, it doesn't really look like he's very serene in that moment. It looks like he's kind of tapping into his anger, but, you know, there's that. Then we'll fast forward a bit to the Clone Wars, and not to mention the fact that he was basically saddled with a, you know, Padawan himself. Yeah, Hayden Christensen makes me want to claw my eyes out, but that's beside the point.
Hayden Christensen wants me to claw my eyes out. Yeah, there you go, whatever.
And then stab my eardrums, but that's beside the point. Through the Clone Wars, and let's back it up. Okay, through the events of Episode 2, which is the worst Star Wars film to me, but it was half of a good film. Any of the parts with Obi-Wan were good. Dealing with Dooku and trying to find out Kamino and all that stuff was really kind of interesting. It was like a detective story. But he gets captured by Dooku, and, you know, it's that revelation that this guy was, you know, a Jedi and now he's turned. And that's going to be one of my themes here, Jedi's turning evil. And then he tempts Obi-Wan at that point. He offers to take him into the fold. He kind of tries to tempt him into it. And we know that Obi-Wan didn't do it. But let's fast forward to the Clone Wars, and I'm going to start quoting the shows and the books a little bit. Some of the things the Jedi did which weren't great. I mean, the most notable one was from a novel that was just recently released called Dark Disciple. Okay, the premise of that story was the Jedi Council decided that it was the right thing to do to send an assassin to kill Count Dooku to try to end the war. Does that sound like a Jedi to you?
Not to me.
Okay, well, this is a plot point, and this is considered canon now. Mace Windu signs off on it and everything. The entire council agrees to it. They get Quinlan Vos, who was a minor character, like he had one scene in a movie in the background, and then he was a more major character in the show. They tap him to go try to get close to Asajj Ventress, which was a disciple of Count Dooku. She wasn't a full-fledged Sith, just a disciple. And through the course of that novel, Quinlan Vos gets turned to the dark side, and they have to almost kill him to bring him back in. And it's these kind of things that I could see easily through the course of all these years of war, turning any Jedi dark. And not to mention the personal losses that Obi-Wan suffered. And again, this is me showing my extreme nerdiness, talking about the show again. There was a couple of plots where one where he had to go undercover as a bounty hunter and try to infiltrate this criminal organization and all this stuff, just the things that they had him do. And then he got really close with the Chancellor of Mandalore. Her name was Satine. Mandalore being where Boba Fett's people are from. Well, Jango Fett's people are from. And, well, through a course of a couple of story arcs, she ends up being killed right in front of him by Darth Maul, who is not dead in the canon. This is somebody he was supposed to have dealt with back in episode one, killed his love interest, though they didn't actually consummate or anything like that. He didn't go full Anakin about it. Killed right in front of him, and I think any of those points could have turned him dark. Any single one of them.
Especially being confronted with his nightmare like that. I mean, it's like, it's Greek symbolism right there, that he's literally, like, the dark side, he's been confronted with the dark side again, and the dark side literally just killed another person very close to him, just like when he was, you know, 25.
Mm-hmm. So it's the old adage, if you can't beat him, you might as well join him, because that way at least they won't be killing your friends anymore.
Something to that nature, and just having your soul worn down over the course of years. Maybe that's all it takes.
With that and a little force lightning.
A lot of force lightning.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that's Palpatine's recipe there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, I see that there are, especially in throughout the Clone Wars, you know, and with the Jedi constantly fighting, even though they're not supposed to be, they're supposed to be defenders of the peace or whatever, having to witness what you see on the battlefield and then compromising their ideals and what they've been taught. I can see that it would cause a lot of Jedi, and Obi-Wan in particular, a lot of conflict.
Well, also, there were several Jedi that turned through, I mean, Barriss Offee, if you know who she is, that was the major plot point that got rid of Ahsoka Tano. Barriss Offee turned traitor and killed some people and framed Ahsoka for it. The Jedi thought Ahsoka did it, and when she was found innocent, she decided not to be part of the Jedi Order anymore.
Yeah, mic drop.
Isn't there a similar plot point in reverse in Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic?
I played Knights of the Old Republic many years ago. I just know that the big reveal in that is that the character you were playing was like a bad guy named like Darth Revan or something.
Yeah, he's the main Sith Lord, yeah.
It's been 15 years since I played that thing, or however long ago it was.
You can have an orange lightsaber if you wanted to. It's like all I remember about that game.
And that really is all you need.
I don't know.
If you
Mace
play
Windu's,
like Fable with it, that'd be awesome.
Mace Windu's purple lightsaber is pretty pimp. I like that.
That's true. All I'm saying is, if you could play another RPG with a lightsaber, modders, please get on this. We want this.
I know. Lightsaber win. Yeah, you make a lot of really good points, and I agree. I actually think that Obi-Wan, if he was going to turn at all, I think, or like, say, for example, if Palpatine was, you know, looking at Anakin and Obi-Wan going, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, which I kind of feel like he did a little bit in episode 3, you know, in the scene when he's, like, chained to his chair, and then Obi-Wan and Anakin are fighting Count Dooku, and he's just kind of, like, looking between the two of them, even though it's kind of, I kind of got this weird, creepy vibe, like, oh, well, if Anakin fails, I'm just going to go with Obi-Wan as door number 2, you know?
Make a Sith.
Yeah, who's going to be the next Sith apprentice?
I was in preparation for this show, I was talking to a friend, and he made a great point. He said when Anakin turned dark, it was like a pit bull had been loosed on the galaxy, a super strong pit bull. If Obi-Wan became dark, it's like a super strong pit bull with a high IQ and very cunning was let loose on the galaxy.
True.
Yeah.
Because Obi-Wan is able to control his emotions unlike Anakin, and that makes that combination very deadly.
So I think with Anakin, we were kind of sure as to when that pivotal moment when he wouldn't turn. If Obi-Wan's going to turn dark, when in the timeline is it most plausible that he turns?
Well, I look at it, I think he would have been primed for turning right after Qui-Gon's death. He's just had his first brush with the dark side. He's dealing with the grief of losing his master, you know, the chaos and confusion of suddenly having to take care of Anakin and, you know, being overwhelmed and suddenly being a knight, with an apprentice. I think that would have been the perfect opportunity, perfect time, really, for someone like Palpatine to come in and start grooming him to take advantage of that. If you wait too long after Obi-Wan is able to work through his grief and to release his grief and anger into the Force and to come to terms with his brush with the dark side, then I think it just makes him stronger as an individual, like, you know, like in his core and in his person. And it would be very, I think it would be much difficult, more difficult later to try to turn him. But I mean, it's interesting, I think, why you kind of have that question. Why is it that, you know, Palpatine at that point in episode one, why did he still go with Anakin, this kid who's only 9 years old, versus Obi-Wan, who, I mean, he's 25, still, you know, relatively young, was just knighted and proved himself to be very strong in the Force, because, I mean, come on, he just killed a Sith, and he's the first one to do it in at least 1,000 years.
I mean,
so
I hate to go with this, but isn't the reason that Anakin has more midichlorians?
I think it was like, yeah, I kind of view Anakin as like the sprinkles on the icing on the cake. You know, it's just because he's so powerful, and Palpatine, you know, he's attracted power, but you have raw power. But Anakin was also a loose cannon to a very, you know, great extent. And they have a lot of problems come with that. Obi-Wan was much more restrained and focused in his power. And that is also a trait that I think would be highly desirable for someone looking to, like Palpatine looking to for a next apprentice, because then at least he knows he can control him. And you also, in the end, because Obi-Wan is able to control himself, have a much more deadly you know, apprentice.
I am going to make an analogy that people would be kind of shocked with. I'm going to use a sports analogy here. It's like if Palpatine was an NFL team about to draft a quarterback, and Obi-Wan is the quarterback with maybe a little bit less athletic ability, but he knows the game in and out. He's smarter on the field. He's more even-tempered. He's going to be a locker room leader. He's probably a wiser player. Anakin is explosive and dynamic and has more raw talent, but he's temperamental. He refuses to learn. He makes rash judgments. Yeah. And even though he's got the better upside athletically, it's not worth the risk of him completely bombing out Johnny Manziel as someone else, like maybe a Russell Wilson in Seattle, who doesn't have as much pure athletic ability, but is just really smart on the field. So yes, I'm using a sports analogy, but it's the same kind of thing. He could have gone with maybe the second best prospect in terms of the Force, but the first best prospect in terms of getting things done.
Well, it's like you have talent versus skill, you know? I mean, talent, anybody can have talent, but skill is honing that talent, you know, and focusing it and making and refining it and growing in that. I mean, Obi-Wan himself, like in later years, was said to be, by the Order, one of the best Jedi that Order had ever had. I look, you know, at Obi-Wan, and I think in reverse, that instead of, he had the potential to be probably the best Sith there ever was.
Yeah.
I could see that.
And I think, Ed, you would say that Obi-Wan would most likely turn when Darth Maul shows up for the second time.
Well, honestly, I think, yeah, I think he would be right at the precipice then, and that's late in the Clone Wars show, and that's, you know, getting close to when Episode 3 would happen chronologically. So, yeah, I think he wears down through the entire prequels, and then that's about his breaking point.
And, of course, there's also the chance that he turns in Mos Eisley because it's so horrible, because he gets tired of hearing that song over and over and over again.
Let me tell you.
And he decides to force choke the band leader.
I want to go drinking with Obi-Wan Kenobi. He knows how to have a good time at a bar.
He's also the best person to play bar trivia with, I feel like. He would know things. I mean, he would win. He could also force direct your darts. So, like, yeah, Obi-Wan's the best Star Wars character to take to a bar. The worst character? Jabba the Hutt. No explanation.
No, Jar Jar's still worse.
Oh, I can see that. But that's a different show. That's a different B&Q. Maybe a St. Patrick's Day special. We'll see.
Could you imagine that guy drunk? Oh, no.
Maybe he stops talking when he's drunk. Maybe he's a sleepy drunk.
Oh, my God.
I wonder if he ever got Palpatine, like, really drunk, would he start, like, going on and on about his, like, evil plans?
He would probably start force lightning the waiters. He'd be like, see? And like, hey, waiter, look to the kitchen. What was that? Nothing. Just because. He'd be like, hey, I ordered this well done. No worries, I can fix it. Done.
I think that would be a very interesting thing to see. Palpatine strikes me as somebody who likes to stay in control at all times. So if you got him, like, completely drunk, what would happen?
It sounds like a college humor sketch waiting to be done.
Robot Chicken had a good skit one time where he's going up this ridiculously long escalator and all the stormtroopers are coming down the opposite side. My lord, stormtrooper. My lord, stormtrooper. You seen that one? It's pretty funny.
That one, it is really good. It is.
I'm picturing in my head Mos Eisley with the Cheers theme song, which is just fantastic. Nice. Be like, Ben! Hi, Ben!
Oh, for all the listeners, I want to give another. This is a fan fiction recommendation for a Star Wars story. It's called Simple Steps, if I remember correctly. And it's very interesting. The whole idea is that Count Dooku basically realizes that Palpatine is planning on getting rid of him and replacing him with Anakin. And so he, has a coup, overthrows, kills Palpatine, declares himself Emperor, and then sets his sights on Obi-Wan as his next apprentice.
That would be awesome.
It is a very good story. Yeah.
So what does Step. Yeah, so we won't spoil that one, but we will now, toward the end of the episode, we'll go to the last of our four major parts. If Obi-Wan turns dark, what happens? I know the short answer is we screwed. but I think you guys can elaborate a little bit more on why we're screwed. Colleen, I'll start with you.
Well, I think it depends on when he turns dark. If I like the idea of a scenario where Palpatine chooses him over Anakin and starts doing the same thing, where it takes many, many years before his plans come to fruition, but begins again at the end of Phantom Menace, when I think that Obi-Wan is very ripe for turning. He starts planting those seeds that early. And then years later, perhaps during the Clone Wars, is where his breaking point is, as Ed pointed out, and then that's where he turns. At this point, Anakin is old enough, he could defend himself. I could see Obi-Wan going dark, turning against the Order, and Anakin. And there's always got to be that scenario where Anakin would have to confront him. I don't think it would end very well for the Order. I actually see a scenario that's very similar to, almost to like what happened with Order 66, where Anakin just kind of marches up and destroys the temple. But for some reason with Obi-Wan, I just see it as being a bit more civilized.
It would be subtle.
Exactly. I see.
How do you make massacres subtle?
I'm not necessarily. Let's put it this way. Anakin is he's completely not subtle, right? So he literally marches up the steps of the temple and just starts hacking at people.
No,
right?
He is Rage Against the Machine.
Right. Well, that's what Anakin does. But so he doesn't try to hide the fact that he's bright. I see that Obi-Wan would turn and then hide it. And he would still be within the Order for a long time and working within the Order to bring about its own downfall. It's the opportune moment when he finally reveals himself.
So he would play the same card as Palpatine did.
Yes.
Better. I think I agree with her. Obi-Wan would play the long game. He would be a double agent. And I think, as smart as he is, that he would eventually overthrow the Emperor and take control himself.
Do you think that Obi-Wan could defeat Yoda in single combat?
Is that me or Colleen?
Either one, because I don't know.
I think Obi-Wan takes him.
I think so, too.
Did you see the battle on Mustafar? That was my favorite lightsaber battle of the entire saga so
Episode
far.
Episode 3, right?
Yes. Yeah, where Obi-Wan fights Anakin on the volcano lava planet, and that was just my favorite lightsaber battle ever. Mace Windu would probably beat Obi-Wan, but I don't think Obi-Wan would fight Mace Windu hand-to-hand.
Well, and this is also in the movies, Obi-Wan is clearly holding back. He doesn't want to fight Anakin. So he's holding back. And if he was Sith, though, he would not hold back. He knows Anakin's fighting style. And I'm sure he's very familiar with Yoda's and Mace's as well, because, he trained under them. And, and he was on the council with them, probably went on missions with them as well. So I he would use every single bit of his knowledge and their weaknesses against them. I'm not saying it wouldn't be simple or easy to do. Obi-Wan is he's a master of what is Sorosu, So he's very good about the approach where in Sorosu, it's like you're on the offensive. So you're very good at you wear the other your opponent down until you have the opportune moment to strike while conserving your own energy. So versus I know that like Mace Windu's style is like Anakin's, it's, you know, Jim So very aggressive. So I see the scenario where Obi-Wan, because very smart, he would first, if he had to choose his own battleground, would it would definitely be where everything is to his advantage. And knowing Obi-Wan, he wouldn't rely simply on just the lightsaber. He would also, you know, use, you know, force push and other other things. You know, I could even see him, you know, be awesome, as if instead of just, you know, killing Yoda or killing Mace with a lightsaber, he does it with a blaster.
So I could see a Sith doing that, yeah.
Like, totally unexpected. You
just
know,
shoot
again,
him from behind.
These are Jedi, right? Jedi and Sith, and they use lightsabers. They don't lower themselves using something to, you
well,
know.
It's a more civilized weapon, right?
You know, for more, you know, elegant age. But I can totally see him, like, you know, hitting Mace with a blaster, and Mace totally not even seeing it coming.
If he's able to mask his true intentions that long, it would be pretty easy to do. And we do know from Episode 3, he does have, in extreme circumstances, used a blaster, General Grievous.
Yeah, exactly. And a spoiler alert for something non-Star Wars for a second. Angels and Demons, the Dan Brown work, and I'm going to spoil it, so if you want to watch it, skip ahead a minute or two. From Angels and Demons, we know exactly how Ewan McGregor would play this if he was going to turn dark. Because his character, the Carmelango, is supposedly the victim throughout the entirety of Angels and Demons, until you find out in the last 15 minutes, he's been the big bad the whole time. And you see subtle hints at it earlier in the movie. And once you know that twist, you can go back and watch the subtle hints Ewan McGregor's put in to make you realize that that's what's going on, because he's a good actor, even if he's working with Dan Brown. So he's having those hints. And of course, I haven't read the novel, I admit. So I knew that was coming. So I could pick up on those little hints. And I think you could definitely, Ewan McGregor's the kind of actor who could pull off that, even if the audience wasn't aware that he was going to turn. You could still have enough evidence. It'd be really well done.
McGregor's a great actor. I could buy it.
Also, oh, yeah. He could sing his motives like in Moulin Rouge, because we know he can sing. Which, you know, there you go. Why not? I'll make a Jedi out of you. No.
Sith.
Well, he's singing Jedi because he's still saying that he's on the good side. And then
okay, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. He'll change later. It'll become a libretto.
I see a scenario where he's fighting Mace Windu, both using lightsabers and, of course, you know, Obi-Wan using force push and stuff, you know, throwing stuff at him using the force. And then it gets to a scenario where the point where Mace thinks he has the upper hand, and then Obi-Wan just whips out a blaster out of nowhere and just shoots him.
I like that scenario. Would Obi-Wan ever reveal himself to the public, or would he try to orchestrate these deaths, you know, behind the scenes, out of the way, try to blame the Separatists, and try to maintain his veneer of the good side of, you know, elder statesman, while all the while actually running the show from behind the scenes? Or would he eventually just show off that, yes, he is the Sith Lord?
Well, I mean, we're talking about, like, Obi-Wan as the apprentice, correct?
That's true. I'm assuming in the scenario that he's still the apprentice, although can only be two Sith at any given time, so he may decide to kill Palpatine or Dooku or whomever else is in the line of succession.
I see a scenario where, cause, you know, he's not a politician. He said many times he hates politicians, right? You don't know, that kind of thing. I don't see Obi-Wan as being as part of the Republic. I see him, again, hiding himself within the Jedi, doing Palpatine's bidding within the Jedi. But when it comes to that tipping point, after he's revealed himself to the Jedi, whatever he does to the point where that, you know, as far as, like, he will not reveal his Sith identity to the public, but when it comes to destroying the Jedi Order, like Palpatine, whatever move he takes, whatever he does, it's going to be viewed in the eyes of the public as legitimate, as legitimized act.
So I have to ask then, go ahead. All right, Ed, I was going to ask, if Obi-Wan turns dark, does Anakin still turn dark, or does it flip?
I think that it could go either way, honestly. I think that could easily push him over the edge, because we know how close to the precipice he was the entire time. Also, if Obi-Wan goes full dark, I wouldn't put it past him to just straight up kill him, because, you know, tying up loose ends, whatever. I still believe that, like we were saying, he would be subtle about every move he made moving forward and how he dealt with the Jedi, with Palpatine, or whatever. If Anakin and Obi-Wan both turn dark, there's no more Emperor. There's not, because Obi-Wan could control Anakin, and if Obi-Wan's in control, it's not good for anybody left.
That's actually a really scenario when you have both Anakin and Obi-Wan as, like, as a team, as they were as a Jedi, but as Sith. Ah.
So they take out Palpatine, and Obi-Wan becomes the Emperor, and Anakin is his apprentice.
Yes.
That's a deliciously evil scenario.
Even better, there is no master and apprentice. Perhaps, like, you know, they get rid of Palpatine, and they rule the galaxy, but pretty much as equals, as, like, an equal partnership, kind of like as somewhat implied in Episode 3, you know, when they're both, Jedi Master. So it ends the idea of, like, you know, the rule of two, like literally master and apprentice, but it's a different type of rule of two. The two Sith coexisting together.
They rule as the rule of two, does the rebellion have any chance?
No.
Well, I'd say there's always hope. There's always a chance, but it would not be easy.
Yeah,
and then it does
have
to question what would happen with Padme and the twins.
If they even have the twins. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's a delicious what-if scenario, because who knows at that point? If you got them both on the dark side, whew. You know, the way you're describing, another analogy I just thought of beyond, you know, the quarterback thing, but with their strategy, I know, Colleen, you've seen the show Once Upon a Time. I believe. Yeah, so it sounds like, the first season is pretty good. And we're going to be doing some talk about it later on B&Q, but it sounds to me like Anakin has an evil queen kind of mentality with his Sithness, whereas Obi-Wan is much more of the Rumpelstiltskin. You know,
that's a good analogy.
You know, just behind the scenes, equally bad, equally evil, but completely different in their methods of evil. And Rumpel is ultimately the more successful almost always because he always plays the long game. And I think that Obi-Wan as the dark side man would have been much worse for for everybody than Anakin, in my opinion. But I would love to see it play out.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. Anakin would have been, I mean, not Anakin, but Obi-Wan would have been much, much more successful as a Sith.
Yeah, I think you're right. He may have been the best Sith of all time. But as Kanye would say, I'm going to let you finish, Anakin.
Can we do a Kill Kanye instead of Jar Jar this episode?
That may be a special. Maybe we'll kill them both at the same time. But, you know, I think it is about that time. So do you guys have any final thoughts on our counterfactuals that we've gone through today?
I just think that Sony needs to take this concept and turn it into a movie. Awesome.
Well, we could use the time turner concept that was in the new Harry Potter and just go back and do all this over again.
Oh, yeah. So instead of, like, you know, Anakin's fall being the focus of the prequels, it'd be Obi-Wan.
Exactly. I would pay a ticket. I would go watch that. Why not? What is Ewan McGregor doing these days anyway, besides being smoldering?
I know. Well, it kind of, like, the idea about, say, for example, Anakin and Obi-Wan, you know, ruling the galaxy together as equals, I mean, that brings an interesting interpretation to bringing balance to the Force, doesn't it?
It really does. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that happen, and maybe J.J. Abrams will do it. And he has a history of creating alternate universes in beloved franchises.
Well, see, I kind of view it quickly, its explanation of, like, why I see him as equals, because the two of them, you know, obviously they have established a deep bond through their training. They had a training bond, and then they had, you know, very, and they were also very close friends. And I don't see that bond going away. I see it changing, and I think that bond would, to some extent, would still exist between the two of them. So you have that portion of their relationship that, you know, still exists from the time when they were both Jedi, but it's what allows them to become so close and so powerful as two Sith, hence the balance between the two sides of Force.
To quote Celine Dion, their bond will go on.
But you see what I mean? You have the light within the dark there, but in this case, it's changed so that the light strengthens the dark.
Yes, I think that's a good, plausible scenario. Do you have any final thoughts, Ed?
I kind of wish you guys hadn't brought up the cursed child. I had tried to forget about the fact that one of my favorite characters I had to bear dying again, but that's another story. But
Harry Potter dies unless you are Harry Potter.
And even then, you still do.
But no, not really. It doesn't really count if you get to come back.
I know.
Spock.
But
my
thoughts are, in summary, it's hard to justify Anakin staying good for reasons we already stated because of his emotional problems and his attachment problems and just his jerk personality. But Obi-Wan, there's some really good arguments for why he could have, and I think the takeaway from this is that if Obi-Wan turned dark, everybody is screwed.
I love ending on a positive note.
Well, Obi-Wan didn't turn dark, so there's your positive.
Yay, he didn't.
everybody was kind of screwed anyway. The galaxy was changed. The Empire rose. Jar Jar still lives.
So everyone, raise your glass of Guinness to the fact that Obi-Wan didn't turn.
Was that a pun? Because good job.
Oh, you will learn soon, Ed, that everything with me is a pun. I play the long game with puns.
Good job, sir.
So I want to thank you both. Ed, thank you so much for being on the show. I hope you'll come back and join us again soon.
Be happy to. Thanks for having me.
Colleen, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Oh, pleasure as always.
And loyal fans, we know we have to kill Jar Jar Binks. Tonight, Jar Jar was on a psychiatrist's couch explaining how he had this dream that Obi-Wan Kenobi had turned dark. And he was saying, Misa scared Master Kenobi gonna be dark. When all of a sudden, the psychiatrist revealed himself to be Snoke, traveled back in time using a time turner, who proceeded to force choke Jar Jar to death and then crush him under the couch.
Hashtag Jedi therapy.
You, yes. you do that impression entirely too well. It's kind of scary.
Misa, thanks for it.
What you don't realize, Ed, is that Josh is, in fact, Jar Jar.
Yes. You were the voice actor, weren't you?
My secret is revealed, Misa scared.
Oh, my poor ears.
Well, we could go the R2 route. I'm inserting bleeps right there, by the
right.
way.
Hey. It's like trying to find a Catholic place.
So, with Jar Jar dead, having exercised his psychiatric demons, thank you again, Colleen. Thank you, Ed. This is Josh signing off for B&Q. We will see you next time.